when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome to episode 35, Intelligence Gathering and Analysis for Preppers with Sam Culper. I am Glenn Tate, and you are?
I'm Shelby Gallagher. How are you doing today, Mr. Tate?
Doing very well. We're doing one of our favorite things in the entire world, which is recording this show, which we love to do because we're nerds, but it's fun, and I think we get good information out. We always do the top 100 things to go first in the collapse, which is a list based on people's experiences from Bosnia. Why don't you take it away with item number 26?
Well, and I always like to give people a quick place to go look for it. Go to our website, prepping2-0.com. On the lower right, there's a big green box that links you to this list. It's fascinating to look at if you haven't already. We're on number 26, which is bow saws, axes, and hatchets and wedges. In parentheses, also honing oil. What does that mean? That means a ways to sharpen all of the tools just mentioned. I think sharp objects for all the whacking down of trees, the gardening, I think there's going to be a lot of needs for such things. So good to keep a good supply of them on hand and also know how to use them and sharpen them.
Yeah, and like with so many other things we talk about on here, these things we're talking about, these items are relatively inexpensive, completely available, legal. Sometimes that enters into the conversation. Yeah, get yourself a hatchet, some axes, bow saw, box saw. I've seen it listed either way. Wedges, mauls, because you're going to need to be cutting wood. The thing with the hatchets and to some extent the axes, it's going to be for kindling. You're going to be taking bigger wood. And one of the things, a lot of people listening out there are like, hey, I don't live out in the woods. I mean, you know, there's no trees. Why do I need this stuff? Well, as I understand it, in Bosnia, in the winters, it got cold and people were not burning trees. They were burning their pianos,
their furniture,
and their furniture and those sorts of things and having to cut them up that way. So don't think of it as a lumberjack thing. Think of it as an urban or suburban thing.
Well, and if you've read book two of my book series, you know that there's alternative uses for such things, especially hatchets.
Oh my, yes. Meeting out justice would be another use for hatchets and axes. As a citizen of a federally recognized Indian tribe, in the past, the ancestors did a little bit of work with hatchets and tomahawks, and so did Francis Marion. So there's that, too. I'm just going to leave it at that because we don't want to scare people away. But there's that. All right. Well, why don't you tell folks about what's going on in Idaho?
This is so cool. And so many of you have heard us talk about with fondness in our voices that we love going to prepper shows. There's about three that we go to throughout the year because of that's the time constraints that we have. One of our most favorite ones was last fall, last September, used to be called the Inland Northwest Preparedness Expo. They've changed the name. It is now the Panhandle Preparedness Expo. It is in the Panhandle of Idaho in Sandpoint, Idaho. Beautiful place. A great place. It's a huge prepping community there. People move there because of the prepping community there. And it's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds on September 21st and 22nd, 2019. What's great about these fairgrounds is that there's campsites. For a few dollars a night, you can come bring the whole family and camp out with folks like us and like other awesome preppers. So encourage you to think about making it a weekend. Bring the family. It's very family friendly. It's from 9 to 5 every day. Glenn and I will be speaking at it. And I have the biggest blast at this one. I say this every time we have an expo, but this is kind of the big one of the Pacific Northwest. I'm excited that we were invited back and I'm excited to go.
And as you've mentioned before, it's like the Woodstock of prepping expos. And as I've mentioned before, without all the smelly hippies.
Yes.
So it's the best of both worlds. So do we have anything going on in the merch shack?
What's in the merch shack?
We do. So excited to tell you about what's going on in the Merch Shack. If you've remembered over the past month or so, I keep saying, we're going to update the t-shirts and the hoodies. We're going to do it. Well, we finally got our order in. We have updated the inventory, so you can certainly go in and order a t-shirt or a hoodie that says the iconic I Miss America symbol. I should probably tell people how to get there. If you go to either one of our, actually, just go to prepping2-0.com. There is a shop tab. Click on that. It takes you to our shopping page. The coolest thing, though, this is brand new. I give all kudos to Glenn on this one. He developed this cool, high-quality plastic sticker that says very plainly and in I Miss America sort of branding, patiently awaiting the collapse. And it's been fun to stick on fun, meaningful places. Right now, we're all of our stainless steel coffee mugs have them. But I'm thinking on a gun safe. I'm thinking our new freeze dryer. I'm thinking the entrance to our greenhouse could be a good place. So find us. And this is a cool offer we have. If you order one, love it. Thank you so much. And if you send us, email us a picture of your creative place you've stuck it with your along with your address, we'll send you a few more.
What we want to do is have folks putting the stickers up and showing them off. It's cool. And as we speak, on my phone, I just received a picture of a water bottle. It's got from a guy, former 2nd Battalion Ranger. It's got a Ranger tab and then the 2nd Battalion, 2nd Ranger Battalion scroll. And then underneath it, the patiently awaiting the collapse sticker. So it's those kind of pics that are cool. By the way, don't need to be a Ranger. I mean, put it on your gun safe or whatever. It's going to be cool. So it's cool. We'll be having a lot of those. We also have the AR-15 mags with the I Miss America on them that are like going bananas. They're flying off the shelves. Well, that's the Merch Shack. I wanted now to kind of return to the reason we're all here today, which is to hear from Sam Culper, who's our guest. Sam, welcome, and tell folks about your background.
Hey, well, Glenn and Shelby, thanks for having me. Well, I'm an intel guy, an intelligence analyst by trade. I spent a number of years in the Army, got out as a sergeant, became a contractor, spent 3.5 or so years in Iraq and Afghanistan, both in uniform and as a contractor. And then in 2012, I really couldn't take the insanity anymore. And so I quit. And well, the rest is history, I guess.
you're really modest. I've been listening to Sam since and reading Sam. I started with his magazine, and I've been and then listening to his podcast for a long time. I feel like I know him. We know each other off the air. Describe Sam so people have an idea of this, all the shows, the newsletter, your books, and your classes. I mean, you've done so much stuff, and there's so many resources. Tell folks, just mention them, and people can get on the Googles and find them. How about that?
Sure. Yeah, well, my website is forwardobserver.com. We're based out of Austin, Texas. And really, I have two goals right now. I mean, essentially two products that I dump all my time into. And that's number one is we run a warning service. So we monitor political, social, and economic instability. You know, if you have questions about, oh, well, what's going to happen, what's going to cause some event, we try to answer as intel guys, we try to answer that. And really, you know, that's the fundamental value of intelligence is reducing uncertainty about the future. And so through our warning service, which is at a very low level, it's AI enabled. We're have some artificial intelligence and we will be continually building that up and really taking a big data approach so that we can make hypotheses, test, you know, back test them against the data. For like riots and protests and stuff. And then we'll really be able to take a big data approach to early warning, which is, you know, instead of getting a text message about, you know, some event going on, you will get a text message or, you know, an email about some event that could happen within days to weeks. And so I'm really excited about that project. But, you know, warning right now, I wake up every morning from about 5:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. I write an early warning intelligence email, which is just a daily political, social, and economic intelligence email, you know, 8 a.m. Central. So by the time you're at work, you know, or maybe even some days on the way to work, you can read through that. And really, the point is for us to tell you about things that are going to happen that day before they happen. And so that there's a little bit more to the warning service than that. And I won't bore you with the rest of the details. And then the other side really is training. People have to be trained, especially if you're preparing, spending hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of dollars on preparedness. We have to know what's going on. And so just through some very rudimentary intelligence gathering, we have to be deliberate about it. No one's going to produce that intelligence for us. But we can learn enough very quickly to be able to set up some local intelligence gathering efforts so that during this event, whatever it may be, we can understand what's happening beyond our line of sight. And more, really more importantly than that, not only can we understand what's going on currently, but we can begin to anticipate the future.
And you put out an amazing book. Tell folks about it. I have a copy of this. Use it all the time. You got to talk about this.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, it's called SHTF Intelligence and Intelligence Analyst's Guide to Community Security. And I've been working. I haven't been pumping the book as much because I'm working on a second edition now. But I have no idea when it's going to come out, just because I don't know. Glenn, whenever you finish a book, or Shelby too, whenever y'all finish a book, are you ever just like, I'm never writing another book again?
Yes.
Amen.
And then we do. And then we do. And as far as like another edition, you go, oh my goodness, when am I going to do this? Totally get it. I would say this, though. There's nothing in the first edition that is, you know, stale or no longer accurate. It's so cool because it is exactly what he described. It's a book for preppers, you know, SHTF. And it's the stuff you need to know about intelligence. And there's more to it than you think, and there's less to it than you think. And he's going to elaborate on that. And then, of course, you do classes, too, where you teach the intelligence process. And the cool thing about the classes, I've never been to one. I hear great things. And you do them all in different parts of the country. If you've got a team, you can send your intel person to the class and learn all this stuff, get all these materials, do some real life examples, some case studies, and then your team person can bring it back and train up other people. So talk about the classes a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. The classes are typically 2 or 3 days in length. There's some custom classes that we could teach a week's worth of material if you want, but over the course of 2 or 3 days, students come in. We talk about the intelligence cycle. We talk about intelligence gathering. We talk about analysis. We talk through case studies. We do some practical exercises. We build some intelligence products, or we at least get started building some intelligence products. And, you know, my goal by the end of the class is students leave and they can actually go back and be an intel officer for their prepper group or their community security team or whatever they have. And really, it's funny because people come in and they take this class, even people who are unsold on the idea of intelligence. And by the end of the class, they're like, I can't believe I've spent this much money and time and effort and resources into preparedness. And up to this point, I have not been prepared to maintain situational awareness during this event that I've been preparing for. And so really, it's just a case of, you know, people not knowing what they don't know. And so once you go through this 2 or 3 day class, yeah, you can go home. You can start on an area study. You can begin outlining your intelligence requirements. You can begin tasking collection. Hopefully you're going back and teaching your prepper group about, you know, just some of the basic things that they could be doing day to day so that we build up a body of knowledge about areas and area threats and, you know, what we call the operating environment, so that if tomorrow or next week or next year, whenever this event happens, we already have a good handle on what's going on. And not only do we have a handle on what's going on, we can begin outlining potential future scenarios. And that's where the real value comes in, because once we begin to understand what's more likely and what's less likely, we can begin to, you know, make strategic decisions and really prepare for these high likelihood scenarios that are going to affect us. One of the major things is, okay, EMP or social collapse or societal collapse or, you know, economic collapse, whatever people are preparing for at a national level, you know, that's fine to be concerned about this stuff. Really, what you ought to be concerned about is what's going on at your local level. How's this?
Exactly.
What is your street going to look like? What is your town going to be doing in 72 hours after this event? And if you can't answer that question, then I hate to step on people's toes, but you're really not prepared. If you don't have a handle on what this future scenario is going to look like locally, you are not prepared.
Well, and that's prepping 2.0. You know, we've talked about this where it's that next level. It's those things you need to know at the next level beyond your individual, taking care of your individual self with some beans and some, you know, bullets and all of that. That next level focuses on, in my mind, comms, water, night vision, community, and what? Intelligence. Because this isn't James Bond stuff. That's one of the things when I first listened to your show, I thought, intelligence, come on, man. I'm a regular guy. I don't have satellites and I don't have spy cameras and all that other stuff. And we're not talking about any of that. You made the point well about your local situation and what good is all those beans and all those AR-15s if you don't know who's out trying to take them. You don't know where the roads are blocked. You don't know who to trust and not trust. And I'm sure you'll talk about this in a case study here in a while. But I mean, what good is all of this stuff if you don't know how to use it? So yeah, just keep talking about intel for preppers, because I don't think most preppers ever consider how important this stuff is. In a lot of ways, it's more important than a lot of the glamorous, glitzy stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, let's start with the mission, right? Because intelligence supports the mission. And so, you know, living in Texas, actually, you know, let's look at Hurricane Harvey as a really great example. So if you lived on the coast of Texas a couple of years ago during Hurricane Harvey, then, and you were a prepper, there's a lot of us out here, then, you know, your mission, one of your potential missions is to evacuate during a hurricane, or to keep looters out of your area during a hurricane, or, you know, respond to these threats, whatever they may be. And they're not just people. You know, you have water, you have bacteria buildup, you've got all sorts of chemicals, you got all the stuff in the water. So it's not just people necessarily that we have to deal with. And so once we understand the mission, then we can really start going through and saying, okay, let's put ourselves in this situation. Let's think through all of the potential scenarios or all of the potential threats that we may face. And then let's identify some countermeasures to these risks to mitigate those risks. Or let's think about how specifically we need to prepare to these very specific threats, because there's a big difference. There's a huge difference.
We're on the West Coast. That's how we talk. It's cool. It's all
okay,
right.
Okay, cool. Well, so yeah, there's a big difference in saying, okay, we're preparing for a hurricane, and saying we're preparing for the effects of a hurricane. And really, you have to identify the effects, because that's what you're actually preparing for. And so that's where intelligence really comes in. And we take a structured, methodical approach to, you know, kind of picking out these specific effects that we're going to have to deal with. And if you don't understand those effects, or you only identify half of those potential effects, then you are really setting yourself up for, you know, maybe strategic shock, which is a fancy way of saying you have been blindsided or exploited by something that happened that was probably foreseeable, but you did not foresee. And that is, that problem right there is the problem that intelligence solves.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep talking about this. People need to hear this. And you're so good. You're the guy, by the way, in the prepper community. You're the guy on this topic. There's nobody else that does this. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I really shouldn't be, because there's...
I know.
There are intel guys here, because they email me. They're like, hey, you know, I read your stuff. I was, you know, a CI guy, or, you know, I was an intel analyst. I'm like, okay, why aren't you running a blog talking about vetting your prepper group if you're a counterintelligence guy? Like, you need to be pitching in on this. You know, if you are an intel person and you're listening, or you're involved in the community, it's like, hey, let's keep pushing, because there's not enough I mean, I this is going to sound horribly conceited, but there's not enough Sam Culpers. And a big reason why I focus on training is to make everybody a Sam Culper so that they can go out and they not only know how to do this stuff, they can go out and teach this stuff as well. You know, I mean, probably not this, not at the same level, but teaching some basics, that's enough to save someone's life.
Just a point. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, just with regards to how do we maintain situational awareness, how do we identify our blind spots, and then how can we gather intelligence to fill in these blind spots and these intelligence gaps? You know, it's like, okay, you're expecting a grid down scenario. Well, that's a really tough intel environment. You know, maybe when we talk about, well, let's talk about it now. So, you know, your grid down environment. I'm big on tech, especially when we have a grid up, right? So one of the things that we almost always encounter during protests, we encountered it when we were supporting some Cajun Navy guys during Hurricane Florence in North Carolina last year. You know, what happens is as power goes down, your access to information also goes down to almost nil. We're watching these live streams during these riots. Okay, that's great to have. Cell phone batteries start to die. Feeds go out, blackout as far as information is concerned. And so when you're trying to drive someone's security decisions, or you're trying to drive someone's operations, or you're trying to provide them situational awareness, when there's a total informational blackout, well, we have to get really creative. And so one of the great things that we kind of figured out along with Amron and PrepperNet during Hurricane Florence was, once these Twitter feeds, okay, let me set up the situation here. One of the things that we're doing for Cajun Navy is we're data mining Twitter.
And explain to folks what Cajun Navy is. I mean, a lot of folks are familiar, but they may not know. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot. This is like a, yeah. So, so the Cajun Navy's, you know, maybe 10 years old or something like that, probably actually during Hurricane Katrina, which was way more than 10 years ago, but the government can't come in and save people. And not only can they not, they won't. When they have the resources to do it, they just will not come in and save people from flooding and from floodwaters. And, you know, so here in the Southeast, we all, you know, flooding's a big deal, especially with hurricanes. And so basically a bunch of rednecks with boats said, well, if the government's not going to do it, we'll go do it. And so they started taking women and children off the tops of their roofs and taking the elderly out of. I tell you, one thing that Cajun Navy did during Hurricane Florence, they went and evacuated something like 90 something elderly senior citizens from a senior citizen center that was flooding because the government didn't do it. The government did not come in and save these people. And so we support those guys, their search and rescue teams, with intelligence so that they can make better decisions. Because they don't have time to say, okay, let's stop what we're doing. Let's get on Google. Let's look all this stuff up. You know, it really works much better when we have an intelligence lane, they have an operations lane, and we can help them make better decisions in real time through providing them real-time intelligence. So that's a little bit about the Cajun Navy.
So we have about 20 seconds before we need to go to the next segment. I want to let folks know that when we come back, Sam's going to talk about the Fox Company operation he was talking about, where his intelligence folks paired up with operational folks like the Cajun Navy. It's a great example of what we're going to be doing in a collapse situation and how intelligence makes the rescue efforts and other things even possible. So please stick with us, and we'll be back on the other side of this break with Sam Culper of Forward Observer.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured, rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test is needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always ready, always charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 amp hour internal battery, the Operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Okay, we're back with the second segment. We're here again with intelligence gathering and analysts for preppers with Sam Culper. Sam, just pick up where you left off. This was good information.
Yeah, so I think we're talking about the Cajun Navy, just a little bit of background of what they do. Just a bunch of rednecks with boats saying, hey, we're going to go help out our fellow Americans. We're going to go save the elderly and people who couldn't evacuate during this hurricane. We're going to go rescue them from the floodwaters. And so I was kind of getting to the up versus grid down. So grid up, we have power, we have internet, great. One of the things that we are doing for the Cajun Navy is we are data mining Twitter and Facebook, looking for people who were on Facebook saying, help, I'm here. This is actually a true story. Single mother, two kids. We're up in the attic and we're, you know, there's flooding, which the attic is probably one of the worst places you can be. Lots of people died in Hurricane Harvey because they went up to their attic and then the floodwaters came up and engulfed their entire house and they drowned in their attic. And so just kind of as an aside, if you go to your attic, have an axe, have a way to break out of the roof. So at any rate, we're looking for these people who are in need of rescue. We take that, we send that to the dispatch, the Cajun Navy dispatch. They, you know, they go do their things. And that's one of the things that one of our capabilities, just because we have access to such large kind of big data tools. So at any rate, cell phones start to go out, power goes down, and all of a sudden, all that stuff dries up. And all of a sudden, we can no longer look for geotags on Twitter, looking at what people are saying in the area, in our area of operations. And so one thing we started doing with some Amron radio operators, some ham radio guys, is they were listening to the local police scanners, and then which we were listening to online because we're based in Texas. We weren't deployed with them at the time. And they start relaying us information via ham radio to someone who has internet, who can then be online and then relay that information back to us. And so that's just one example of one way to kind of get creative. So let me just go over this one more time. Someone did not have power but was still operating a police scanner. They did have ham radio. They are relaying that information to another ham radio operator who did have internet, who is then inputting that information via the internet back to us. And so, John Jacob, lots of other people say communications and intelligence goes hand in hand. This is one way where communications really can facilitate the transfer of intelligence information. So grid up, everything's great. Grid down, that's when we really have to be creative. And that's really where intelligence gathering from lots of people come in. So in the Army, we had this saying, every soldier is a sensor. And, you know, that means you're out on patrol, you're doing X, Y, or Z. And if something does not seem right, or something, you see something that is not right, then you have an obligation to tell your first line supervisor. And so for us, kind of in the Patriot and Prepper community, every community member is a sensor as well. And so when we do have grid down, this is the importance of communications. When we do have grid down, that's all. It's extremely important that every person in our group or every person in our community understands you have an obligation. If you see someone looting, if you see someone who is armed, who's obviously not a member of your community, if you see any potential threats, you have to let someone know. In this case, that someone is your designated intel guy or your designated intel team. And let me just talk about that. If you have one intel guy, that's great. But we're talking about 24/7 operations here. So you can't just have one intel guy. And if you have two intel people, then we're basically looking at 12-hour operations, 12-hour shifts. If one gets sick, you're back down to one intel person. So this is why really everyone needs to be cross-trained to at least a very basic level understanding of intelligence and what this process looks like. And so once we have everyone on the same page saying, yes, if I see something that is of potential intelligence value, I will report it up. That's really one way that we can maintain a much better level of situational awareness in our neighborhood or our community. And so, you know, let's look at a situation like this in another real world example, which was when we battle tracked the Ferguson riots back in 2014.
This can is describe what battle tracking is. Yeah, because a lot of folks aren't familiar with that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, I'll explain it. I'll explain it as I'm describing this process. So, you know, back, this is what kind of put us on the map, because it was myself, a fellow intelligence analyst who was actually stationed in South Korea at the time, and a handful of volunteers. And the question was, can we maintain real-time situational awareness during the Ferguson riots online and just with commercial off-the-shelf technology? And the answer was yes. So what we did is we were data mining Twitter and Facebook during these riots. Actually, before the riot even started, we had like a 60-minute head start because we were listening to the police scanner and this call sign Warfighter 33, which was the local National Guard commander who was on the scene, started telling his National Guard units, hey, go out to your static checkpoints. And that was our first that they were preparing for rioting that night. You know, we go back in time and there was a big question. Is there going to be a no true bill? How are they going to find this guy guilty? You know, or are they going to charge this guy or whatever the situation was? And there was a no true bill, which means people were going to go crazy, for lack of a better term. And so we had a 60-minute head start. We said, look, if the National Guard, they're starting to prepare for this riot tonight, things are going to kick off. We got 60 minutes. Let's figure out exactly what we got to do before this happens. And so what we're doing is we're taking information from Twitter and from Facebook and the police scanner and some VHF and UHF communications, as well as some people on the ground at the time. And we started plotting all of these events on a map. So there was police were forming a skirmish line. Okay, great. Put that on the map. Police were setting up a roadblock. Okay, put that on a map. And so over the course of several hours, we got a really good picture of exactly what was going on through this riot. And we call this battle tracking. And instead of tracking, you know, the flots, the forward line of own troops and forward line of enemy troops and tanks and soldiers, we were tracking the progress of the riot. And so, you know, that's something that with a little bit of training, actually, just by describing it, a lot of people can probably do this at a very basic level, but with some training, you can actually get quite good at this. And if you are expecting kind of a high operational tempo environment during an event you're preparing for, then doing this is well worth your time, because, you know, the question then is, okay, if we were in Ferguson and we had to get out of Ferguson, how would we do that if we didn't have a map of exactly what was going on?
Exactly.
And so through having this map, and really all we're doing is we're visualizing raw data. But now that we have this map, we could say, well, there's a lack of activity over here. And, you know, we can confirm that there's no riot, no rioters, no police in this path of egress. Well, yeah, let's take this way to get out of the city. And so, you know, people who have, I talk to people all the time, they have 4 or 5 hour bug out routes. That's a lot of miles for not having any inkling of what's over the next hill or what's happening in the next town. And so that's a hurdle you're going to have to, I mean, identifying that challenge is great. The problem is, okay, how do you solve that challenge? How do we get information now about what's happening in the next town before we get there and maybe get wrecked?
Yeah, exactly. And a point you were talking about, training and 24-hour operations and cross-training and having plenty of people. You've made this point, so I don't want anyone to think that I'm being brilliant because you gave me this idea. And that is, if you are perhaps older or you have a disability or you're a little immobile or maybe you're just out of shape and you think to yourself, well, what good am I? I can't run around and bust down doors and stuff like that. The answer is there's a bunch of stuff you can do if you are an intel person. And that doesn't mean being a spy. If you're gathering this information, you got runners. I mean, you're dispatching information, you're running radios, all the things Sam's talking about out there, listeners. If you are not 100% fit and mobile, this is a great thing for you to do. Number one, it's a good thing for you to do. Number two, everybody needs to be cross-trained. So keep that in mind. And I have a couple examples, Sam, of what I think you're talking about. And tell me if I'm tracking with you. And that's hunting and lobbying. You're saying, what the heck? Those don't have anything in common. Hunters, what makes a good hunter? Now, a lot of like prepping 1.0 preppers would say, well, hunting is all about I can hit this dime-sized group, you know, at 1,000 yards or whatever exaggeration they're telling you at the time. They think it's all about shooting, right? Well, when you think about it, hunting means knowing where the game is, where they're not, where they're going to go, where they've been, finding them. Good hunters, you know, can be average marksmen. Good hunters know where the game is and they know how to get there. That's the other thing. Forget like all the cool, sexy stuff. Well, don't forget it, but the part about where the enemy is and where the good guys are, that's important. Even knowing how to get to where you need to be and how to get back is important intelligence. So think of the hunter example. And then the second example is lobbying. When I lobbied, I was pretty good at it, and not because I was, you know, a backslapper or I got people drunk or whatever it is people think lobbyists do. I learned how to collect intelligence at the Capitol. For example, the legislators had the parking lot, and I figured out really quickly from watching them come and go which legislators drove which cars. Why does that matter? Because I would know if particular legislators were on the Hill at the time and could be, you know, you talk to them, or if they left. I would also watch, and if I saw a group of 4 legislators together going off campus to go talk of strategy or go have lunch or dinner or go get drunk or whatever it was they were doing, I knew who was talking to whom, and I could start to figure out, hey, these 4 people have nothing in common except they all took money from this particular other lobbyist, and I bet they're working on this one other bill. And so people were kind of marveling, like, how do I know all this stuff? I didn't know all this stuff. I just figured, I called it the watering hole, right? That's where everybody came. All the legislators came into this parking lot, and you could tell who was there and not there. These are the very practical kinds of intelligence gathering that we're talking about. Does that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what you just described reminded me of, what's that story about Wayne Gretzky? Someone once asked him how he was so good at hockey, and he said, I don't skate to where the puck is. I skate to where the puck is going to be.
Exactly.
And so understanding trends or being able to plot out a trajectory really allows you to act not just on what's happening now, but act on what you can expect to happen in the future. And in a lot of ways, that's intelligence gathering and analysis.
Yeah, no, keep going. This is good stuff.
Let's see. Yeah, so we're talking about bugging out. There are a lot of applications. Really, what I would encourage listeners to do is write out once a couple sentences or whatever, and write out what your actual mission is, or get out on a piece of paper and say, all right, let's be very deliberate about being very specific about potential scenarios. Not I don't want to hear EMP. I want to hear local effects. Okay, local gangs trying to take over the area. Or, looting, or law enforcement abusing their authority and essentially acting in criminal ways. Or, there are a lot of potential scenarios, and really it's local to you, which really goes back to how good is your area study? How well do you understand the vulnerabilities and fault lines of your own local community? Because once we understand those vulnerabilities and fault lines, once we know what's going to break, then we can begin preparing for what's actually going to break. And so, get out a list and think through this stuff. And also, I would encourage, do this with your group, because a group process is so important to intelligence, because no one is as smart as everyone. And, Bob may have an idea that's not great, but it causes you to think of a great idea. And so really, once we take this group process to brainstorming what can go wrong, then we can get out a list, and then we can begin prioritizing this list of things that can go wrong by likelihood and impact. So a nuclear meltdown, a la Chernobyl, is a low likelihood, but the impact is off the charts. So let's make a note of that. A tornado here in Central Texas is a high likelihood and high impact. It is going to happen. It is going to turn someone's life upside down. Could be us. You never know. So what we want to do is, once we have this list of high likelihood and high impact events, then we need to begin prioritizing the next thing, which is high likelihood, low impact, and low likelihood, high impact. And then finally, low likelihood and high impact. Or low likelihood and low impact. So at any rate, what we want to do is begin prioritizing these events for which we need to prepare. And then that really gets into the preparedness side, which I'm not a prepper expert, but what I am an expert in is identifying the things for which I need to prepare. And so, really what we don't want to do is begin preparing for the wrong thing, because we don't have enough information to understand the future. We really don't actually understand what's going to break in our community, or, maybe there's lots of other causes for that. But so really, we need to analyze our area. And that's something I talk about in the book. And, actually, we have now a free course. It's called Basic Training, just Intelligence 101. People can go to forwardobserver.com. You just sign up for a free 7-day trial for our pipeline training, and you can take that course. And really, I go into, kind of what that process looks like, some things we need to be thinking about, how all this intelligence stuff actually works. And, and then if you want to continue intelligence training, great. If not, that's fine. You need to have that information. You really at least need to, at a minimum, need to understand of what this process actually looks like. So then you can go back to your preparedness group and say, hey, look, this is something that we've got to do. We may be preparing for the wrong thing. So,
and a great example of one little teeny part of an area study I did a couple weeks ago, and that was, I was listening to our great guest, Officer Mack, who was on and talking about gangs and the corollary to gangs, which is prisons, and how gangs are fostered in prisons, and how people in prison are probably going to be let out in mass through a variety of ways, whether it's, just a humanitarian thing or a political thing, hey, let's flood the area with criminals, or whether it's what he and I think is most likely, which is gang members have contacts on the outside, and the contacts on the outside say to guards and wardens, I know where your family lives, and so you're going to let us all out, that kind of thing. So you take that, and I realized pretty quickly that very near us is a large, high-security prison with about 1,200 extremely horrible people who are dying to get out and do terrible things. And So there's a classic example of a little piece of information. Oh, there's a prison nearby. You need to know that because you got to plan for the effects. You got to plan for the effects of these things. So that's the kind of thing. And what are some other items in an area study people should be thinking about? First, they should do an area study. It sounds like a daunting task, like, oh, an area study. Oh, my goodness. It's kind of like, oh, geez, take a ham test. It's actually not hard at all. What are some things involved in an area study? And by the way, people can do this on their own. They can go onto the free website, you know, the online course that you do. Tell us about area studies.
Yeah, well, really what we want to do is we look at the six layers of the operating environment. And so those six layers, it starts with the physical terrain. So mountains, hills, rivers, valleys. We next look at the human terrain. And this is not just race and age and gender and demographics and stuff. It's attitudes and beliefs. And understanding who, understanding how, really how your neighbors or how the populace are going to react to certain scenarios, the better we can describe that, the more realistic expectations we can have of the future. And the better expectations we have, then the more appropriately we can prepare for those things. So that's the second one, is the human terrain. The third one is critical infrastructure, water, power, sewer, you know, all sorts of stuff. I would include, you know, bridges and roadways in critical infrastructure as well. We're really just looking for what can break and how, what are its effects going to be? And not just now, just immediately, but, you know, the power goes out for a few hours. Well, it's been in the 90s, you know, so people will get by. Power goes out for days and it's in the high 90s. Last summer, we had like 40 something days of 100 degree temperatures. It's like, well, yeah, in a matter of days, people are going to start to die. And it may not even be days long. And so, you know, just understanding your critical infrastructure and understanding the timeline of events. And really what we wanted to look at as well, second and third order effects. Just because X happened does not mean that Y and Z are unimportant. And one major task of intelligence is looking for those second and third order effects. X happens, and then Y is going to happen within 72 hours. And then within 24 hours after that, Z is going to happen. And now all of a sudden, we have extremely specific and, you know, hopefully accurate expectations of the future so that we can say, oh, X happened. Okay, great. Well, we've got 72 hours before we get to Z, and that's when things are really going to get bad. So we've got 72 hours to figure out what we're going to do before this happens. Critical infrastructure is number three. Number four is politics and governance. Hey, your mayor matters, your county commissioner, whatever, they make the rules, or, you know, hopefully try to, at least try to make good ones. How are they going to respond? Next, we have military, law enforcement, and security as number five. You know, if you have an army base or you got a National Guard post, you know, what are they going to do? How are they going to respond? How's law enforcement going to respond? Are they going to obey the Fourth Amendment? How do they feel about the Second Amendment? So on and so forth. And then number six is economics and finance. What are your economic and financial drivers of your neighborhood? What does your neighborhood look like at 25% unemployment? Because that's a pretty real, that's actually probably a baseline scenario going forward. And so those are the six elements of an operating environment. And we need to be as descriptive of those as we can, and really, you know, look at the fault lines and vulnerabilities in each of those six areas. And once we understand that, then we can get a really good list of, hey, here are all the things that could potentially break. And then prioritize those according to likelihood and impact, and then start trying to solve those high problems, because those are things that are going to happen and they're going to impact you highly.
And Sam, we have about 3 minutes. I would like you to make two points, or at least start something. First of all, first point is, how can folks get a hold of you and describe again some of the products you have out there? By the way, we're not making any money from referrals or anything, so people can get more information, and then at least touch on scanners and how important that is. So what are some products you have, and how can folks get a hold of you? And then tease folks about scanners, because we'll have a good discussion of scanners in the after show.
Sure. Yeah. So forwardobserver.com. And we have two main product offerings. We have our warning service, which is an intelligence warning service, where the goal here is to generate threat intelligence before it occurs, and also describe kind of on a broader trend what's going on and maybe how close we are to some type of SHTF event. The second thing is the training pipeline. So we have, I'm building this progression, this training progression out. And so, you know, at a certain level of modules, you'll be able to get a certificate, like a real, we'll mail you a certificate once you complete all these training modules. And really the goal for you is to build and sharpen your intelligence skills for this event, because we know the future is going to be pretty bad. The question is, how bad is it going to be? And you know, once you can wrap your mind around that, then you can begin to answer that locally. Because if you live in Los Angeles, your future is going to be way worse than our ranch here in Texas, just by volume of necessity and volume of people. So, and then, yeah, scanners. You know, scanners are crucial. There are a lot of areas, unfortunately, where law enforcement is moving to encrypted communications. A scanner's not going to do you any good there. We can talk about direction. Well, we probably can't talk about direction finding right now, but, you know, that's one thing we can look at. But just having a police scanner, we think about, hey, something bad happens. Who are the first people to know about it? The people calling 911, talking to dispatch, and then a dispatcher communicating with law enforcement, hey, go here because this is happening. And if we can listen into that, then we can really be among the first to know what's happening. And, you know, if that meets our threshold of action, then we can take action on that if it's bugging out or bugging in or making some kind of decision. So you want me to tell you a police scanner that I really like?
Yeah, please do. We got about 30 more seconds.
Okay. First of all, make sure that your area does not have encrypted law enforcement first responder communications. The Uniden Home Patrol, it's the UNIDEN, Uniden Home Patrol 2, I love it. It's super easy to use. It's extremely mobile. So if you're bugging out, I really think that you have to have one of these. You can spend like $80 or $90. You can get a GPS antenna. When I drive cross country,
we're running out of time. Our apologies. Okay, right. The Uniden Home Patrol 2 with P25 encryption. You want it? Trust us. Shelby, take us out.
Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.